Like, ride with me if you ride with me. You can slide with me if you feel like 550 on the fast.
This beautiful, beautiful welcome to Matamor Chats, the Live Pleasure Podcast, where me and my boyfriend's other girlfriend help you to deepen your intimacy and better understand alternative relationship structures. Hi, I'm Fifi. I use she, they pronouns. I'm bisexual and polyamorous, so obviously I'm greedy.
And I'm Gabby. I'm also bisexual and polyamorous, so obviously I just love cheating.
No. Fake news aside, we are two femmes who have the same boyfriend. His name is Bear, but Gabby and I are not dating.
No, we're just really good friends, and you're watching the very first episode of Metamore Chats, which we've called Baby Slut Advice.
Baby Slut Advice, here we are. This is a continuation of last week's conversation. That was our first episode, How to Have a Great Sex. And we just really believe you deserve to expand the possibilities of your intimacy. And I was going to share a story then that I didn't get to, that I will get into now, shall we? Is this the story time?
Yeah. No, it's story time. Let's start out with the kitchen table, our favorite segment where we just share a little story. I shared last week, you know, my story about what great sex is to me, but you didn't get a chance because our audio kicked out. So why don't you let us know what great sex is like to you? Like, name a time. And
there was, there's a specific story that we had reminisced about, and it was our sweet little polycule date. It was a four-person extravaganza of
very much like we were on a swingers takeover, and I was like, if nobody wants to hit any of us tonight, we just gonna do us, because this is ridiculous.
It's gonna do us. Wait, I don't know if we're thinking about the same time, because I'm thinking about the time.
Are we not?
No, we were out, we were in your home. You had cooked for all of us. You don't remember? That was one of my favorite.
Wrong time, wrong story. I got wires crossed. Oh, it is, because I'm a Cancer, and so I'm always like in my head, I'm secretly thinking, how do I get everybody over so I could cook for them?
It was beautiful. That was one of my favorite moments, because I laid down the strap quite nicely, I would say, on Gabby's girlfriend's, and it was a moment of triumph for me. No. excellent.
For sure. Yeah.
So I would say that was a great sex moment. So many elements. It was a food, it was the people. Oh my god, there was like,
you were a genius, because I was gonna do the lights on, like the lamp on, and it's just a little like start, and you put it like behind the curtain, and I was like, oh my god, your mind.
It was so sexy. We had the bin of we had such an assortment, because obviously Gabby, us being industry that we're in, there was an abundance of toys and options. It was like Candyland. And it went on for hours. It was a marathon.
You know what? In my head, I was like, oh, was it long enough? But you're right. It was pretty long. My bad. I just have high expectations.
I think by the end, me and Bear were both like, yeah. I'm like, we're done.
Yeah. We've been for sure.
The brains have been completely wiped out.
I think you guys almost took a nap after on the couch. Like, we walked out and it was just two dead people on the couch. I'm glad you made it out. Sex, because you laid strap. What was great about it?
Laying strap is a full body workout, y'all. Like, I put my heart, body, and soul into that experience. And Liv and I were the connection. It was real. Like, it was, I felt camaraderie. I felt support. I felt arousal. It was, I think I even caught a glimpse in some reflection somewhere, and I was like, wait a second, this is just too beautiful. So the whole aesthetic vibe, energy of it, and then, you know, the aftercare, the pre-care, the post-care, that's what really made it excellent.
I made scallops, and everybody in the polycule makes really good scallops, so it was like the pressure personally was on. I was like, I have to show them I too can make some good scallops. And I think I had wine and like, I forget what the sides were, but I was like gagged about it. I was like, I can't wait till they come over. I bought like new pajamas and Miranda was like, we know what your pajamas look like. I was like, no, I bought special pajamas for you to come over. What are you guys, what are you talking about? And it just like did not compute for them. My bad. I think they get it now.
Yeah, that was when I learned that they are way femmier than I even imagined. I didn't realize they wore skirts to work. And I was like,
we have so many femmes in the poly pool. And then poor Kabir is just like,
Mr. Bear. He's just the bear.
I'll text him like, oh my God, we got new like furniture, like new decorations. And he's like, cool. I'm like, no, there's three other people I should have hit up about this one. You're right.
It's the dad energy for me. That's what it is. Like, we just need it. It's like the grounding. It's the that energy for me. It's so supportive. I know. I'll be, my head's up in the clouds. Too Piscean. Like, it works very well.
It does.
That balance.
My head is also in the clouds. But like, mm-hmm. I think also I'm like embarrassed about it. I'm like, oh no, like comparatively, like he must think I'm insane. But no. Wow.
No, no. I mean, he lives with me, so.
What's that supposed to mean? You're great.
Thank you so much. It means it's working. It's working.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yes.
Today on Baby Slut Advice, we're talking about play parties. We're talking about sex parties. And we want to kind of just walk you guys through step by step what sex parties are like. The first time I went to a sex party was Hedonism. Mm. And that didn't really feel like my inaugural experience. The party with you felt more like that because there's not a consent speech at Hedonism. There's not like that level of a container being created for the sex that's happening at Hedo. So it kind of feels like a bunch of people just taking stabs in the dark.
Wow. No. I mean, so it, what was the, if we do the step-by-step walkthrough for folks, so Baby Slut Advice, this comes to you from Sluts of New York directly.
Sluts of New York, yes. But really wise sluts. I mean, Fifi is such a talented, skillful relationship and intimacy coach. And I think from that space, other than just working with communities, like you have a lot of wisdom about like what people's like kind of triggers and trauma responses can be. Sometimes I feel like people's lack of understanding on like what trauma can look like, especially in like an intimate environment, it like makes them unintentionally cause harm. And so like that knowledge alone is like, puts you above so many people.
To create safety, or just a sense of safety, safer sex positive spaces. Yeah, it's a very nuanced thing for sure. And I would say as someone who has public opinion about these spaces, and you've experienced quite a number of them, quite a variety, and we've been to many of them together, and
yeah,
I would, like, just to even get started, like if you're a baby slut just starting to dip your toes into what sex positive spaces feel like, you're thinking about potentially exploring them, you know, we're speaking from the context of New York City. We've stomped around quite a bit around here, so we know what it's like, original yes. to the area. And I guess, yeah, like,
but we've also been to other places though. Something that's like big at my job, we talk about bridging, mm-hmm, which is like that there's like swingers, there's open relationships, there's polyamorous, and in different states they all have different ideas of like what a sex party should entail, because they all have like different relationship dynamics that make that true. And so like bridging the gap is like also being like, okay, you know, as much as we are New York, we're also very accessible in that like we've been to places that don't really practice like necessarily embodied consent, that are more like no means no consent versus facts. Yes means yes, and we still have like a lot of empathy for those folks. Like it's never like we're not running into people who are like, I can't wait to cause harm. It's really people who learned that like their consent skills should look like that. and that it's okay.
Yes, if you can be okay with that being their reality and your realities might not always match up, and it might not be a good chemistry, a good scenario for whatever individual it is to feel comfortable enough to really enjoy themselves in a setting, depending on those things. So I would say, there is such a – so I guess like with expertise, I can speak on what sex positive spaces, I would say, in more urban areas are like. And I would say they lean, a little more protocoled in a lot of ways. Like I think – when we're
very much like explicit prior permission is the like legalese term for consent. Like they all are like very strict on the explicit prior permission versus like there are other places that are like no means no, and so they're not necessarily asking permission at each like escalation or activity.
And I would say what spaces you can count on having the what's the consent
explicit prior permission is the legal
so spaces framing that require explicit prior permission, or they have more sort of protocols in place to ensure that that is the code of conduct for the space, are typically spaces who have high liability. So if it's a space that has a high traffic of people moving through it, then you can generally anticipate that it might be a space that encourages, promotes, and tries to adhere to that form of agreement between the members, the people participating, people in that space. I would say you can have more nuanced versions of consent if it's a more private setting, if it's something that's less bodies, basically. I would say like...
Right? Like I'm not going to go into Hacienda and night of be like, I'm going to plan a consensual non-consent scene with a stranger. Like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it wouldn't go well.
I know gay men are like, I don't give a fuck. Go off, gay men. I hear about their play parties and I'm fascinated.
They really take the cake. They, I don't know what it is. I mean,
they are so sexually free, and not everyone, like, of course there's a spectrum just like everything else, but like,
absolutely,
I'd be hearing some stuff. I'd be like, damn.
What is, speaking of kind of what we go into the space agreeing to, in many gay male spaces, you're entering a space agreeing to pretty much anything happening. You might get
to like no means no consent, right? Like that you will stop someone who touches you, that people can just like touch and get to know and connect with you, and that you will set the boundary when it becomes too much for you.
It's a kind of at your own risk, very much so.
At your own risk. Yeah, for people there's... who struggle to speak up, for people who do not really know what they want yet and therefore aren't like competent yet at expressing it, those spaces are really hard.
Mm-hmm.
No, and for everyone, you know,
I would say leave that to the pros. Like if you're hiring a pro, if you're a baby slut and you're starting off, I wouldn't start there necessarily, unless you are getting professional support, and those are definitely available and accessible and can show you the ropes around whatever it is that you're seeking to explore, because it could be kink, and it very well could be a good idea to get some guidance and support from a professional if you're trying to go all the way in head first. I mean, that was me. That was speaking from my baby slut experience. Like
I was Olivia. My partner, I was like, I'm going to read all the books. I'm going to do the research. I was a journalist at the time, so I even interviewed. Like, my beat for a bit was non-monogamy, which should have been the first clue to everyone. And Olivia was like, it'll be fine. I'm going to just go. And then, sure enough, was like, maybe I should have read a little bit. But, you know, it's cool. It's cool. We made it so many years in. And, you know, pivoting strategies has always been just a part of life. It's fun. Speaking of, when I went to hedonism, again, no consent speech, and the way that they get it like more comfortable for people to play is by enforcing clothing off spaces. Okay. So like if you cross a certain line, then you have to take your clothes. It's like clothes off after this point. And then to enter the playroom, you have to like remove your clothes and put them in a cubby, which is nice that you get a cubby because I like being in control of my own stuff. But it does like kind of just throw you to the wolves, because now everyone's walking around butt-ass naked and like already. And for consent, like what's great for slowing down is the fact that you have clothes on. So you already have your clothes on, so pulling out a biz combo is boom, boom, boom.
Right.
But when you're naked already, it's kind of like I can see how people just want to rush. And so there was a couple that was trying to fuck, and I at the time only went to fuck a girl. I had already taken dick like the night before, and I was a little sore because it'd been a while. Mm-hmm. And I really had only gone on that trip to lick coochie, so that was more dick than I'd expected to take.
Yeah, already.
It was the Eiffel Tower I mentioned in the previous episode, yes. But. So I was like, where's coochie? So she kept asking to fuck, and I was like, not with your man though, not with your man. So finally we start like playing with each other, and then I noticed that her man is like around the corner, but like and
no!
Then eventually she's like are you sure he can't come? And I got so mad, I was like, you can actually get the fuck off me. And I'm gonna be leaving the playroom now. And then I went and took shots, and then I got drunk and told everyone at the resort how mad I was. I was like, this bitch kept trying to fuck me. And I said no to her man, and she still wanted her man to come. And then, like, the next morning I walked into breakfast, and everyone was like, how you doing? Did you calm down? You were really mad last night. So I feel like the reason that I thrived in that space is that not only was I willing to advocate for myself, but I was loud about advocating for myself. I was a little embarrassed how loud, but I was loud about advocating for myself. And so someone who is not gonna feel good about that, who's gonna be like, oh no, like they keep saying like I'll just say yes and then like feel how I feel, which is a totally valid response, like based on like trauma and the way people are socialized. But like I don't think that that is a safer space then for those people, and that is why we push for embodied consent, explicit prior permission in high liability spaces.
Yeah, because stuff like that can happen, like because of stuff
I was peeved because I was so forceful too. So I was also like, if it was a different bitch, if it was like we're in Jamaica, if it was a different bitch, if it wasn't a New Yorker, what would happen? Like, why? And it was so silly. It was even embarrassing for them. Like, why are you like as a man peeking over the side? Like, I mean, as a human, why are you peeking around the side while I'm fucking? But just with all that privilege and you still want to go do that? I don't get it.
Very, very interesting. I think you're hitting on a topic that I think for those also just beginning to get into these spaces, this is a very acute issue that comes up everywhere, the voyeurism. How do you participate from a distance? Because there is so many layers, I think, to what comes up for people when they feel left out or excluded of an intimate situation. And then the behavior just starts to get very childlike in a not childlike situation where we should really be holding ourselves in adult fashion. It's not happening. So if we can get down to like what is coming, if people can be in touch with themselves, I think the key word you're using is embodied consent, is that you're aware of yourself and where you're at and what's coming up for you emotionally or just physically in your body, sensations that might urge you to take an action or do a thing that could be crossing a line. And
yeah, for sure.
Inappropriate, making somebody feel very uncomfortable. So
my first time at Hacienda, there was a guy who was like, there was one guy who I'd spoken to before. So when he was making like eye contact with me while I was playing with Liv, it made sense because we'd already expressed, right? Explicit prior permission. But there was another guy who asked to fuck, and I was like, maybe later. It was my first party. I wasn't really sure what like Liv was going to be feeling or even what you guys were going to be doing. And like, I know Kabir was like checking in to make sure I was good. So I just like wanted to make sure I didn't make any plans that I couldn't keep or whatever. But then he just kept coming back the whole night. He'd be like, what about now? What about now? And then I'm like playing, or not, I wasn't even playing with Liv. Liv was playing with someone else, but she was nervous about being alone. So she, this is her first play party as well. So she goes, can you hold my hand while this guy's fucking me? And I was like,
yes, of course.
Sure. So I'm holding the hand and he's looking at us and I'm like, it's not you, sir. It's not you. And we had, we invited the man we had given explicit prior permission to be our voyeur to, right? And he came over, he's the one fucking Liv. So it's like, we clearly had different agreements, right? He was normal. And so we said, pull up. And you just keep being like, what about now? What about now? What about now? And then later I told that story to Kabir. He was like, you could have gotten him kicked out. And I was like, damn, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that. It was my first time. I didn't know how strict or not it was. But, like, yeah, that's annoying.
These are the examples that we don't have time to cover in the whole overview orientation. And people's attention spans is so short that to really explain how that is one person saying it once is really more than enough. And maybe that just needs bears repeating is if you
is that maybe is a no. They don't, men are taught that maybe is a negotiation and in fact invited to do that. Like they're, I feel like I lived my whole life hearing like good salespeople, good negotiators be like regaled in society. And so like in an intimate space, they take that same like logic that they've been socialized under and they're like, I'm gonna just keep pushing. And it's like, well, what if we did this? What about later? How about now? And the first time a guy at Hacienda, a white man too, but was like, can I eat you out? And I was like, I just remembered, this is true, not because I didn't want to fuck him, but I was like, oh, I just remembered I said I was gonna fuck someone upstairs, like I'm gonna say 15 minutes ago, and then I forgot. So it's only like you saying that, sorry, reminded me, I gotta go. And he was like, oh, that's no problem. We don't have to fuck at all. And I was like, thank you for telling me. I did mean it. I wasn't lying and trying to get out. But that was, that's, that enhanced the safety and security that I felt.
That
I didn't end up fucking him, but I could have. But I could have.
But you could have. You had the choice. Yes, you did. And I mean, you always do. And that someone would continue to try and budge on a maybe or try and make a maybe turn into a yes is just, I don't know. I think also in terms of how you have to say something, I don't know. Like it really do. I'm starting to see at this point with cis men in particular that if I am not like slapping them across the face, even sometimes I will tell you no, like they won't hear it. Like I'm dating one currently. He is the, like, I will literally just slap him across the face in public because that's what he needs. And he's like, you can do that to me. That's, like, we have that type of relationship where, like, he knows that I'm dominant. So that's the way we relate. But, like, sometimes I wish I was like, do most of y'all need a little bit of just, like, no, coño. Like, are you fuck?
Well, I think at the other end of that, right, is in intimate partnerships that are not safe or where the person is, like, really wounded and, like, takes, like, rejection to a degree of, like, wanting to lash out about it, those situations go a completely different way. But it's because of the safe spaces or the safer spaces that we are in that you're finding, like, people that you can do that with.
It's such an important space, like, to even meeting people and being a person myself that the first time I realized, oh my gosh, I get to be that explicit with what I want, desire, or need right now. It felt like the only place in the world where I could really do that. And it still does a lot of the time, honestly. Like,
yeah. I mean, I wish that I had the same practice in a space like Hacienda, like earlier on in my life. I even used to work at strip clubs where I do think like the tone of voice, the professionalism in a strip club is a little different. There's a lot more directness there. But even then, I still don't think I was as practiced as like Hacienda has made me at being like, no, I'm actually not going to do that for you. Mm-hmm. Or like, actually, I don't need to overextend myself and overextend my kindness in this situation just to like keep up a social contract.
Precisely. I don't need to do that. I mean, but it really does take practice. Like, it didn't happen overnight for me. Like, my first play party experiences were oversaturation of things primarily. It was everything everywhere all at once. And I kind of was intentional with it. It was intentional that I was going to be a little unintentional. That was kind of how I went into it. And
I mean, I was so unintentional prior to Hacienda and like, I'll say NSFW, even though I never officially went to a party there. And even though there are some problems with NSFW, but not that there are not problems with Hacienda. But just like when I first went to a play party and heard the consent speech, and also the way that they show people how to embody it, right? Is like those icebreakers that they, and it's not just Hacienda that does them, but having people practice receiving a no and giving a no is like such a good foundation for you to be successful at a play party, because you're going to literally get offered the most direct shit. Like, someone's gonna be like, can I eat you out? Can I just smack you around? Like, I would love to do, here are what my boundaries and desires are. Mm-hmm. And if you don't feel comfortable being like, okay, no to that, mm-hmm. like, if you are not already embodying that in your everyday life, it might be a little bit more difficult to do that in an intimate setting. And it's so good that they have you practice, because at hedonism, you just walk in and everyone's just like, can I fuck, can I fuck, can I fuck, can I fuck?
I mean,
the it's whole almost... time. I mean, I left with an overinflated ego, I will say, but one day I was like, they had like workout classes and cooking classes and stuff, so like, I'm like, I'm on my way to cooking class, actually, and I have to go. So can we talk later? Like, get out of my path. Or like, mm-hmm, I'm actually mm-hmm. going to go take a pole class. So if you could leave me alone, you could have fucked. But like, why are you following me around?
It's a different code of conduct over there in those kinds of spaces where it seems as though people really don't mind coming off that way. I think the ways of relating in sex positive spaces that I think you have to think about what you're getting out of it. Like, if you're just there, I guess that's the reputation I can imagine hedonism has. It's like, it's just a place to fuck.
I think the problem with hedonism actually is it has how many weeks in a year? That many different venues wrapped into one, right? Because they do like kind of these weeks where people show up and it's like a theme. Like, there's casual swinger week, there's young swingers week, there's like polyamorous week, there's like all these little sub podcasts that do it. And like, I remember my trip was like a Wednesday to Wednesday. I think they did this intentionally so we could see two different trips arrive. And the first trip was mostly older folks, like, I'm gonna say swingers. At the time, I didn't really know how to identify swingers, but like, in retrospect, those were swingers. And then another group of like young people who did OnlyFans pulled up. All white though, like Euro white OnlyFans people. And it was very different ways of navigating consent, ways of flirting, ways of interacting. There was a guy that just like really thought that he had to convince one of the other people on the trip with me. And at the time, I had like more recently launched my Instagram. And I remember like in the shift from like a sorority girl Instagram to a sex positive Instagram, like frat guys hitting me up and being like, I don't really understand this concept that you're like posting about. And I'm like, oh, consent? They're like, oh, I don't. They're like, it's just like my whole life I've been socialized to think like girls don't really know what they want and they need to be convinced. And like that sometimes they're like just saying that to push you. Mm-hmm. And then like even one guy I knew from high school reaches out and it's like, you know, I have a partner who if I'm not like aggressive in that way and like, no, come on, come on, come on. And then she acts like I'm doing something wrong and I'm not masculine. because like she has been socialized to understand sex as that chase. And I think that just gave, like, at the time I was like, men suck, which is true, but like I think it also gave me more empathy, at least, because like that is how we're socialized, like as as a sexual being. Like some of the ways that I engaged with sex originally were like really fairy tale princessy. Like I was really raised in purity culture, and so I did kind of want, in like high school though, but like want to be convinced, like I didn't want to be seen as a slut, so I wanted it to seem like I didn't really want to do it. But but in high school I had literally that done a purity pact for my debutante ball, which is like basically the virginity ball. So I had a lot of things that connected to that, but like yeah, it just I really empathize with them being like, I learned that that's what women want, and women even have mirrored that for me, so like I'm confused. That doesn't mean they don't have a responsibility to improve, but like
no but it's the grand majority, I would say, honestly. Like that's still, I would say, the primarily perpetuated idea is in line with this purification, this pure version, this patriarchal god. They're like, man,
go over there if you didn't want to suck a little dick.
The
I'm like, because I wanted to hang out and play video games, y'all don't do that no more, damn.
No they really seem to have been, over the course of many generations, convinced that they need to convince people they want to have sex with to have sex with them, that it's not a thing that is just, it's been so contorted, this idea that people that they want to fuck don't actually want it, so they have to kind of force it or convince them to want it. Like that narrative has to come from it only has one source, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I reflect on times where I like would go into a situation being like, oh, if they're going to offer, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say no the first time to, and like now that I'm like older, I think more so what I was doing was testing their consent skills, right? I was testing like, are you going to flip on me? Are you going to talk about blue balls as soon as I say that? And like your response therefore prepares me to be asked a second time in the future and be like, oh, I want to consent now. And I wish I'd had the language for that instead of being like, oh, I want to be convinced. It's not that I wanted to be convinced. It's that I wanted to check that it was safe for me to say yes. And to check that, I had to say no first to see what what their response was.
Absolutely. But saying no when there's also value attached to your ability to say yes and say yes quickly when a man asks for what he wants, then that can be hard. And that practicing the no is probably the greatest baby slut advice I could give, is get really good at saying it, feeling confident and secure in saying it, and may every time you say it be thanked graciously afterward.
Well, that goes into how to receiving a no, which is like very much like, I feel like the popular thing to do, at least at Hacienda, is to say thank you for that, thank you for sharing, thank you for stating a boundary, thank you for honoring yourself, whatever, you know, format you want to take it. But now I'm like, everybody says that, I want to get creative. I'm like, wow, like that was really courageous of you. Like, wow, you're really skillful in your no. Like something, you got to switch up the vocabulary because everyone is saying the same old, oh, well, thank you. I got a razzle dazzle.
Got a little razzle dazzle, yes. No, we love a no. We celebrate a no. We can, yo, confetti. We need to have some confetti every time somebody says no.
I do love a no. It makes me feel so still like vulnerable with them, or like intimate with them, but just, you know, for different reasons.
How does it feel for you exercising your no? Is it something that makes you feel any type of way?
I certainly wasn't good at it back in the day. And that first Hacienda party, I was like very giddy. I was at a sex party for the first time. I was really comfortable. At one point, like, Liv is fucking and I'm holding her hand, which I thought was so silly. Like, she's like, don't leave me, hold my hand just in case. And I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't want anything to happen to you either, but like, you're in a room with like 50 people. But yes, I will hold your hand in case something happens. And then I look over and you were also playing with Bear. And I was like, what a good day. And I think also though, like, somebody was playing right next to me and Liv and asked if I wanted to fuck, or no, asked if I wanted to make out. And I was like, no. And he was just like, okay, let me know if you change your mind. And there was like a giddiness that emerged from my body that I don't think until like we've been like really talking about this, like I've always housed it with, oh, I looked over, everyone was fucking, what a great place. And that was making me giddy. But it was also that like we did a whole like 30 minutes of practicing our nose, and then literally people asked to fuck and I was like no, and they were like, okay, let me know if you change your mind, which is the shortest response I've ever received to saying no in life. And then you know, Kabir was really like checking on me the whole night because he knew it was the first party, so he was like, how are you both feeling, are you guys good? And so I felt very secure and like not abandoned at the party, even though I would have understood if he was busy because he was working. And you were as well. So like I think just like that giddiness was really about like, oh my god, I have agency. I have so much agency to do this. I have so much freedom and agency and power in this moment. And even this one guy who keeps like annoying me, like was like, you want to fuck now, do you want to fuck now, and was like voyeuring the whole time, I knew that what he was doing was wrong because they had expressed it in the consent speech. So even though I didn't move to get him kicked out, it was because I was like, I know I'm right in just ignoring him. I know I'm right in being like, anyway, because they created that container for me to feel that way.
It helps a lot. Yes. Yeah. When there is an acknowledgement of what are our rules for engaging here tonight, it's very, very helpful. So if you're in a space that does have that, then yeah, it could help. If you're new to some of these practices, if the saying no still feels a little uncomfortable, I feel like it definitely took a while for me to get that giddiness. At first, the giddiness was just from saying yes to everything because I wanted to. And then as soon as I started to learn my nose, and it was kind of a process of elimination. I was like, I'm going to try it all and see what I don't like. So that then in moments of being able to, I can exercise the no. And that feeling was definitely, I mean, it was layered. I think at first there was like more emotional, mental questioning than when I wanted to say yes. I think the like, do I say this? Is it, can I get through it? Like, there's always that question in the process, or there used to be. Before, it was like, can I get through this? Like, I don't know, like, do I just like power through? And then so that happily has gotten a lot shorter, where it's like, wait a second, my discomfort, like, me,
it's number
fear,
one. Paramount, I think paramount is number one, right?
Yes, but it,
I keep
mentioning
definitely... paramount and penultimate, which means like not that, and I'm like, fuck.
But they kind of
last.
Penultimate.
It's like close but not. So when I'm like, it's like the penultimate, people are like, that's not great.
Another one. You want the ultimate. Sorry. Not the penultimate.
Well, so what are your slut goals for 2024 then? Because it sounds like we've both learned so much, and now we're kind of like in the flow of sex positivity in our lives, right? So like, what are our goals? We have to be intentional now. We have figured out our no's, and we understand our yeses a lot more. What are they for 2024?
Goal-wise. I think just on that front, intentionality, like to be intentional for me means sitting down, kind of stopping everything that I'm doing. And before I agree or put things on my calendar and have to go through all the labor of what it takes to show up for that thing, really sit down with myself and consider, wait a second, instead of me saying yes to things, maybe I want to be the curator and the designer of a lot of what I show up for in 2024. That's definitely one of the big intentions for me. So I think,
oh my god, same. I didn't have that great language, like the curator. Ooh, I was just gonna say I want to curate more, but like the last 2 or so years I've been like kind of like smorgasbord sampling everything and like seeing things like what dynamics other people are doing. Like voyeurism has been such a huge part of my play party experience in addition to like finding partners and meeting people. So like now that I've like seen kind of like how people negotiate scenes and like what kind of kinks are happening, at least at Hacienda, I'm like, okay, so like what do I want to negotiate for myself? My coworker literally like had the dream of like an alien abduction fantasy and told their dom, and their dom planned it.
Wow.
And I was like,
there you go.
I need to start working harder because I don't know if the alien theme speaks to me, but certainly there are fantasies that I'm like, I need to start putting them on the calendar. Like, that's a bitch who knows what she wants and was like, here's the date and here's who's going to do the planning and I would like to be in a room and get abducted. What?
I love that. No, get creative, y'all. Put it in a storyline. Like, write your own, be the star of your own adult film. You can take it there with loved ones. Teamwork can help make the dream come true. I think this is definitely when multiple partners comes in handy, is to make
yes, I'm sure that she had a lot easier of a time because of the amount of people, and polyamorous have so many people. When people are in just a couple, it's like it's just only he can do it. So but like some of my fantasies I know for a fact that are like Liv don't want to do them, or there's other fantasies like Kabir don't want to do it up. So it's so good that like I have the option to be like, thank you for honoring like your truth. Well, it's also rough because like I'm at the point where like I only trust like queer people to be like doms or to be in like power roles because I don't know what's going on with cis men, but they don't. I don't get what's going on. Even in like play spaces, they're still figuring some stuff out, and I'm not.
I don't think we should trust them. We shouldn't trust them.
Yo, some of them are like, I'm a dom, so call me daddy. I'm like, now, like,
no.
What are you talking about? No. I just met you. I said hello.
Yeah, not for me.
I think dom means like just be weird. I don't know.
It means like get what you want. Like I know what's best for you. That I need to take it from you because you don't know how bad you want it until I take it from you.
Yeah,
it's that thing again. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. It's I would need to see a really long resume before. Yes.
I'm just like, when you say you're a dom, do you mean you're gonna listen to my fantasies and desires and then help me curate that?
Right.
Or
because that's your
job. Do you mean you wanna beat the shit out of me and you just like would like blanket consent for that? Because that's like just not the same thing.
Yes, PSA, not the same thing. To just those two distinctions are very important. Yes, thank you. Thank you for, I mean, honestly, speaking of resources, this is definitely the necessary one. Bear Kabir has been talking about this, creating just a baby dom. I mean, well, there's baby dom for femmes. Lola Jeans are great. Dom educator.
Yes.
Actually, everything.
Yes,
but I think the specific to the cis man plight, like we're going to keep coming across this of the cis man dom and how much more responsible he has to be, and how if there's not a clear distinction between which one are you doing. Are you holding space for me, the sub? Because that's really all you should be doing. That's your one and only role, actually. And if you don't think that that's what it is, then
you're not a dom.
No.
Period. What it is what we were talking about in our very first episode last week, which is dropping the agenda. Like, are you showing up and willing to be authentic, or are you showing up and I need to have sex so I can go tell the story tomorrow, and I need to have sex in this particular way so that I can feel masculine and powerful, and like I have to discard this person immediately so that I feel like I'm not being held hostage. Like, if those are not dom behaviors, those are extractive consumptive behaviors. So like, what is the actual, like, why are you a dom?
Mm-hmm. Ask yourself that. It's a very important question. Yeah. I think for me, I honestly wouldn't have become a dom if I didn't start off as a sub. That was kind mm-hmm. of the journey for me. And then as someone mm-hmm. who really just finds this to be my identity and who I am all the way through, there's going to be evolutions and shifts. So I had a phase. I had an era of submission, and then we evolved, and then we entered dom era. There was dom era, and yeah. I was so grateful for, like, it had to happen in that order for me. I think had I not first really been in that position of the receiver, would I be able to empathize as the provider, the dom in said situation? But yeah, that's, I guess, another topic for another day, because that one's a big one.
Well, in so many resources, they do say, like, mm-hmm. that you have to be a good receiver first. And I think Wheel of Consent really emphasizes that as well, that you have mm-hmm. to be a good receiver. And what's the other one that's, like, someone's doing something? What is it? Like, you're giving – oh, good giver and a good receiver for mm-hmm. you to be a good, like, doer versus – the other word that's on the Wheel of Consent, whatever. Like, you need to be good at, like, someone doing something to you and asking you to do something to them, and, like, falling within the boundaries that they've set and the, like, rules that they've created before you can be good at, like, just doing shit all pre-negotiated still, but, like, more with more freedom, I guess.
Period. No, it's true. I think those of us who may feel very confident about our intuition, regardless of what you think you know about what someone wants to actually...
You don't know!
No, we really don't. We really don't.
It's so interesting because, so the first day that we met, we didn't talk much, right? Because it was at the play party. But the first day that we met, you were talking about subspace. Yeah. And I was like, I've never really experienced, like, submission or subspace, but it's certainly something I'm like, maybe, because I was so new. But I was like, I can't really see that. And then I think either that night or maybe the following night, you were doming bitches. And I think it was the following night. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a core moment for me where I was like, I can identify what BDSM is it now in this, like, play party context that I couldn't when I was only looking at it in, like, a dating context, because then I was only looking to, like, committed partners for whether or not that would be on the table for me. Mm. And now I'm like, oh, you can negotiate your own scene. You can just go do what the fuck you want to do. And I also never thought that doming would be, I thought it was like, I mean, this is like baby bio essentialist of me, but I was like, you were just born a top or a bottom. You're just born a dom or a sub, and you can't change your configuration. And I was like, I'm just not a top. But I realized it was, like, more my lack of understanding when it came to, like, kink and BDSM that mm-hmm. was flaring up rather than, like, me having real opinions on any of these things. But, like, watching you champion subbing, and, like, everyone, the way people would talk about you was always like, loves a little subbing. And then I watched you dom bitches for like 3 weeks straight. I was like, I have learned so much already. Thank you. This has been a shift.
Yes, there is a shift. Shifts are possible. Yes, we can initiate them ourselves if we want to, and it can be scary. I mean, the territory felt like, I mean, by that point, because I was such an experienced sub, I was like, I'm ready.
Right, because you get comfortable negotiating. You think about what you as a sub would want, and you're like, okay, I know how to give someone what they want. I at least know how to mm-hmm. consider their fucking emotions and desires and create an experience for them, mm-hmm. versus like coming out of monogamy and like mononormativity more so, because like I was non-monogamous for a while but still like learning very much about our community, mm-hmm. like I was like, oh, like there's more that I could have learned. I didn't understand this fully. I was like, why would people go do that? And now I'm like, oh, it's because they have so much agency in that experience that of course it's pleasurable. Mm-hmm. It's not like you just walk into a room and people can do whatever they want to you and you just have to be comfortable with it and you can't tap out, because that would be pretty ridiculous.
No, but I think also the squad really helps, like having a network and a support and people that you can turn to for comfort and safety in those spaces is helpful. So that's the other primary advice. I would say, like, starting there,
yeah.
like if you're just reading, starting in the books, like getting your head wrapped up around the language, I think definitely having the vocabulary helps a lot, and how to negotiate some of these conversations. That really,
yeah,
those are really good tools to have. And then the people, and then having your people and seeing who you can trust for support through some of these new territories that you're dipping yourselves in. And stay safe as much as possible. Use all the protection. Support and protection that you need.
All the tools. All the barriers.
Yep. No, and get to know yourself intimately. I think for me, yeah, there was definitely, and just getting older and holes changing, you know, and once you start putting stuff in them, like things can get a different, you know, like all the fun in the world, and also kind of just like peace. I think that's something that I would, that's advice I would give myself. Is that there was a period where it all caught up with me and I had to full body stop and took some time to recover. And that can happen if you out there sweating it up. And
I will say that by the time I was a Hacienda member, I was like very intentional, taking my time and everything, because I was so traumatized. I was like, I better. And I'm so glad that I did, because I learned so much just observing. Like, mm-hmm. that first day, I don't think I planned to just observe, but the fact that I was like, oh, I'm overwhelmed, I think I'm just gonna, like, chill. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful for it, because I really got to, like, look around and learn, and I participated wholeheartedly in, like, the icebreakers and practiced my no all up and down, and that's what made all of the future experiences so good.
Mm-hmm. And all the future experiences of... whether it's at a play party or you're negotiating a scene with people you casually met that night, all of this as a way of, I think those spaces, the language and the tools, reaching for those before jumping into, I think like less contained, intentional spaces can be harder to practice these things because you will likely be the odd one out. So if you are looking for sex positive places to go or explore, there's options online and IRL. I think it depends on what people are into, you know, like how do you, what's your situation? Are you partnered with someone? Are you trying to begin and explore solo or with somebody else? Or are you into kink? Do you have a curiosity, a sexual fantasy, or something that you want to explore that you might need to hire support for, that you don't know anyone or are dating anybody who can really deliver on this specific thing that you're looking for? Like, what type of slut situation will depend on the approach? But definitely, I think intentionality is the important thing all the way through, and vetting places and things and people for sure. Also,
I mean, we're in New York, so I will say that vetting goes a lot differently for us, because mm-hmm. there is, like, again, these are high liability spaces, so they do have to emphasize explicit prior permission, versus like outside of New York. I mean, my coworkers are primarily Connecticut, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing about the venues they're going to, and mm-hmm. It's like just, you know, people are gonna touch you, like they get a tour for sure. People give them a tour. I think people love to share like the hygiene practices. They're like, use a condom. Here's the puppy pads. But what about like creating a container of safety and like a speech where everyone's all together, and then icebreakers is such a great way of doing that. But if each person is paired with like an employee who just exposes them to the space and gives a variant speech, how do you, you don't even know what container you're in to know what the expectations are, to know what the etiquette is to be successful.
You really don't. Yeah, no, it's challenge. I would say we are spoiled in that sense where we can expect folks to adhere a little more to this explicit prior consent way of relating, and that we are empowered and encouraged to take actions towards removing folks who don't adhere to that way of relating. Yeah. So I do.
And that part's hard too. Like the willingness to remove, to call someone out, like those are skills. And I think about the guardians at Hacienda, those are trained volunteers.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's not people, when we're trying to create intentional sex positive spaces, there's a lot of work that goes into it for sure. And
yeah,
there's a lot of people doing it. And if you are, I think really get your people, get your community, creating an intentional sex positive space, you don't have to spend money to do it. You can create that space in what is accessible to you if you are not in a place that, like us here. And I think it in that sense, you would be doing your own vetting and finding folk. And
yeah.
I think we can definitely keep that in mind. I don't know. I'm thinking about that now too, for people who are like trying to create their communities from scratch and or get support in sex positive resources and things like that. And how, Gabby, you're building, you have resources available that are really helpful.
I have been building a little database on Notion. So I actually do have like organizer resources for throwing like a mixer or munch versus throwing like if you are a sex club or a kink group or one of the many names that sex parties take. There's like a guide to like having a basic consent policy, and even like a sample from NCSF, which my job, #open, we work really closely with NCSF, and they literally have so much on their website. It's so impressive, but not a lot of people know that they can go there for those resources. So I mean, amongst other places, so I compiled kind of all of the resources that are great. There's some stuff from Lola Jean, there's some stuff from Effie Blue, into one kind of Notion setup, whether it's like learning consent and like having a document or like person model consent for you. Sometimes we just need the resources, and we certainly don't get it in sex ed.
No, this is so, so helpful. And I'm gonna wrap us up because we've been live for an hour now, and I think we covered so, so much. And
we did. This,
yeah, we're gonna have these links, show notes, and all of this information, recording, replay will be available on multiple places. And so just stay tuned for that info. We will be back here live again next week. And I'm so excited to keep doing this with you, Campy. I love my meta.
I love my meta. We got to make it a shirt. But also, we made it without an audio issue.
No, yes, celebrating that. Yes, yes, yes. Oh my gosh, yeah, next week I'm going to mention postcards. Okay, my lovely.
Yes, I'm excited about the postcards, and we will mention them. And thank you to everyone for joining us on Metamore Chats. We'll be here every Thursday live on YouTube. You can listen. This was Baby Slut Advice, and next week we actually have a surprise for them.
We do.
So tune in, okay, and you'll find out what the surprise is. I'll be promoting on Instagram, so you'll probably know. But yes.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Grateful to you all. Wishing you all a great, fabulous Thursday and a safe, fun weekend.
Like, ride with me if you ride with me, you can slide with me if you feel like 550 on the 5 sticky, you can get high with me, that's a deal, right?